and have put an end to their hatred and no longer nourish illusions. But they delight in the way things are and keep their hearts open day and night. They are like trees planted near flowing rivers, which bear fruit when they are ready. Their leaves will not fall or wither. Everything they do will succeed. And now we'll sing together hymn number 8, Mother Spirit, Father Spirit.
This is working better than it ever has. It's pretty groovy. Thanks. So again, last week thinking somewhat about womanhood, and then this week kind of drawn to a little balance thereof, although succumbing, I guess, in my aspirations to that eternal temptation of the new minister, which is to, you know, conceive of a sermon topic that's actually like a 20-page book or so. A 20-chapter book, you know, 200 pages or more. The differences between men and women, there's just a simple little topic that I'm sure we'll put, come to a nice, comfortable resolution of over the next 20 minutes or so. So by way of channeling this a little bit, my inspiration for the service first came when I was talking with a couple of facilitators of a small group ministry here at the congregation, our Thai groups. And these are folks who were also in a woman's group in the case of the woman and a man's group in the case of the man. And the comparison was being made between the kind of communication that took place just in a men's group or just in a women's group, or in a setting where men and women were communicating together. And these small group ministry programs meant to be real deep sharing and deep conversation. You've heard me speak about them before. And interestingly, each of those two people named the quality of the shared sex, shared gender group as being a little different. That there was something about the communication there that was a little harder to achieve. And interestingly, both the man and the woman said, "I think it has something to do with the men." And each said that as tenderly, as graciously as they could. But they were just trying to be realistic about what the dynamic was there. And since I really believe our practice toward the world of equality and loving differences that we're aiming toward is made in conversation together, maybe we better spend a minute looking at what the difference there might be. And so just slightly, I will say that this sermon leans a little bit toward men or toward the male aspect of this dynamic. But since we all live in the midst of this dynamic, it will hopefully be of interest to each of us. So there's, you know, we can, I think pretty readily about some of the standard societal assumptions that are made about the differences between men and women. We know that these change over time. I can say a word about that. We've made incredible advances in the last 50 years, in the last 150 years, and so forth. Nevertheless, it's my experience that most of the world still functions under certain presumptions about men and women. And some of these are rooted in our biology. Some of these are totally rooted in our culture. There's a complex dynamic we'll try and get at a little bit. What I want to ask you to holler out to me is, what, if any, gender stereotypes do you think we as a society still function under? Not necessarily we ourselves as individuals, but when we look at modern life in America and this goal we have of equality, what are some of the differences that most get readily put out there that, between men and women? And again, your caveat is you don't necessarily believe it. Okay, so in the real world, different pay for the same work. Okay, I don't know if that's a societal presumption. We could say that it means that men's work is more valuable if you're putting your money where your mouth is. That's the presumption.
Men always have to
make
a lot of money.
Okay, so something about men, the provider, the achiever, the having to make money, a standard. Peter?
Men love to fix things.
Men love to fix things. Okay. David? Okay, that the higher power is a male. All right, that's a societal presumption we're going to labor on. Let's hear from a few women. Oh,
men don't cry.
Yeah, Carol, did you want to, or did you? Okay, sorry. Please, I didn't say that the higher power is always a male. That's the societal presumption that we're dealing with there. Okay, in the back there, in white.
Homemakers are only women.
Yeah, any of these. Differences that we're going to lift up. You could say the corollary, which is something about women. That's an interesting piece. Ray.
Men have a problem getting in touch with and expressing their feelings.
Men have a problem getting in touch with and expressing their feelings. We'll have to spend some time with that. Nancy?
I was just
going to
say, men have trouble communicating their feelings.
Okay. All right, so we got the dual gender confirmation there. Independent attestation, always good. Mary in the back. Okay, so we live under a society where white male privilege is really systematized in some way, so economically, politically. We'll do just a couple more, Annalise.
Men are the lesser important parent.
Men are the lesser important parent relating to that homemaker's presumption that's made. John?
Women want
an alpha male. Okay, so there's, you know, we will definitely have to tread lightly on those waters about the ways that the stereotypes we labor under serve everybody in different ways. Okay, it's one thing to say stuff about men, but again, like there is that corollary. One last one in the pink in the center. Thank you. Yeah.
Men start wars.
Okay. Yes, we'll get more into that as well, this biological, perhaps, relationship to aggression or something, and the presumptions that we make of that. Now, some of these are going to prove to be rooted in some kind of reality, and some are not. It's not the differences that we're going to be trying to play with and loosen. It's the attitude that's taken to those differences. We have to be wary I think this song may illustrate the point for me. This is the first track there, Daniel.
Abide them even now and then. Than ever marry one of them, I'd rest a virgin rather. For husbands are a boring lot and only give you bother. Of course, I'm awfully glad that mother had to marry father. But I hate men. Of all the types I've ever met within our democracy, I hate the most the athlete with his manner bold and brassy. He may have hair upon his chest, but sister, so has Lassie.
Let's fade that out, Daniel. Thank you. So clearly, these differences have been a bone of contention over time, we could say. That's a Cole Porter song written by a gay man, I would say, but sung in the words from Kiss Me, Kate. It goes on from there. That's the result of putting I Hate Men into the iTunes search engine and seeing what kind of songs are out there in that regard. You'll be happy to know that there are also a number of songs, I Love Men, one of which I thought of playing, but it was a little bit too risque, actually. And that points us back here toward what I want to say about gender difference and what its origins maybe are. We have, on the one hand, biology. We have, on the other hand, all of the social and cultural forms that come out of that. It's just a fact that here on Earth, the main way that Mother Nature has chosen to make life move forward in new generations is to get pairs of oh-so-very-similar but just slightly different critters together to make a new one of those, either of which comes out. Sexual reproduction is the most common way of advancing the species, and so we have this interesting kind of dualism and the need to resolve that dualism built right into nature. There are exceptions, of course. It's not necessarily the only one. I suppose it's possible we could have evolved like mushrooms and send off spores or something like that, but that's not how it's played out, nor like certain species of fish can we change our sex midway through our lives and just pick up the other side of the obligation. The actual biological differences, though, between men and women can get so spun out of whack in terms of the values and interpretations that are put on those things. The main difference really seems to be, we have a Y chromosome instead of the X chromosome, and the physical processes that flow out of that, the main one being that males have more androgen in them when they're young and developing and growing, when they're in the womb, and that we have a greater amount of testosterone in our bodies for the course of our lives. Now, that's just going to be the plain fact of human existence until anything that we can conceive of as human existence comes and goes. So we're always going to be living in this system where we just are compelled to, in some ways, respond to a member of our own dear human family as different. And it's going to be there as long as men grow beards and get a little taller and can throw baseballs in that way that they can. You know, we have to acknowledge that there's going to be these kind of raw physical differences. And yet, so much then gets attributed to it and valued on it and so forth. The real danger when we acknowledge that there are some subtle physical differences and some incredibly plain ones, like where the baby comes from, that we're always going to have to live with as a human species. That we're not saying that biology is then some kind of destiny. Sometimes people have said, oh, well, men have testosterone in them, they have more testosterone, that's the way it's going to always be, and so on some level then, all of that violence that seems to be related to it, or aggression, or these other things that are correlated to it, that's somehow inherently natural. You know, like, we can't escape the testosterone, but it's making a huge mistake. It's assuming that the testosterone in men that defines our difference is the cause of all of those characteristics that are often most associated with men. That tight control, that inability to be emotional, that rough and tumble play, that greater predilection for aggression in many forms, that allowed to go unchecked really spins kind of out of control. So we don't want to justify a social order that is unfair to women and unhealthy to men by rooting ourselves too much in the body, but we have to root ourselves in the body. Just another side piece that I want to be clear about, that there's also the whole reality of gay people and of transgendered people. So these differences, these body differences are they're kind of fluid. But for the vast majority of folks, we seem to just treat each other as recognizably men and women, and we have to live in the midst of that dyad there. And I guess I would argue that everyone, whether you're gay or you're straight or you're a man or a woman, whether you feel in between genders or caught in the wrong one, we're dealing with what seems to be kind of the root human dualism.
Some have argued that then the oppression of men over women, oppression of women by men, is sort of the root oppression. It's the first place we kind of went wrong in treating each other as wholly equal and valuing each of our contributions, and the whole history of the patriarchy and so forth comes out of that. And that's a topic for another day, obviously. But one just brief description of it, of course, is the religious expressions that we've received. Where for generations and generations the power of the universe is perceived as male, or where Eve was said to come from Adam, when actually our biology is quite the opposite. Left unchecked, any human being will be a female. It's in order to be a male that things have to be different, that the Y chromosome has to do its work. So that kind of flips things on its head. I'd like to suggest that there are better ways of viewing the balance of male and female in the world, in our world, if you will. The yin-yang is a lovely symbol that many people like, where we have these differing energies that flow together and complement each other in different ways. And actually, I was thinking about the chalice as well, this particular one that we have, which I love so much. The two circles originally represented Unitarian and Universalist, but maybe we can even imagine them as representing men and women. And what the image does for me there is that those differences between us, as real as they are, that's the sliver on either side. And the part that we want to live in and celebrate and raise up is that heart of our humanity, that huge, vast, shared peace in the center. All right. So we have these basic differences. Those are that's the biology of the matter. And then the history of humankind is, in some ways, the history of the way men and women have tried to navigate that. And for a really long time, it's men who've done more of the navigating, a beautiful change underfoot with the whole rise of women's liberation and so forth. And even today, men continue to labor under what I think are really outmoded versions of masculinity. In preparation for the sermon, I watched this fine little documentary film called Tough Guys, G-U-I-S-E, referring to the face of masculinity and toughness that that men still have to put on. This is a piece of the differences that we named earlier that we see particularly in movies and video games and TV and so forth. It went on, you know, looking at how heroes over the last 50 years have gone from being, you know, basically skinny, kind of normal looking guys to these just giant, you know, gargantuan. You look at pro wrestlers of the 50s, if you would want to do such a thing, go back and watch stock footage of 50s era pro wrestling. But one fascinating thing is they just look like kind of normal guys. And now there's just, you know, they're immense, bulked up kind of monsters almost. And it pointed out how this way of giving value to a certain expression of those physical differences is all out of whack, and how harmful it is when violence and strength and power over and dominance becomes a big piece of how men identify themselves as men. And the most heartbreaking part of the movie was these kids who were asked, high school kids, kind of, you know, give a word for what a real man is like. And their words were tough, strong, independent, in control, even a little bit mean was one of those words. And then the words, if you don't fulfill that vision of masculinity, were words like sissy and wuss and wimp and fag. Okay, that was the most common one. So there's a way in which some of these conceptions of the differences, even though men have crafted them largely, can be very harmful to men as well. And I want to take a minute and share another song with you to show some of the ambiguity of this, and then I'll wrap things up. This is a song called Men by Loudon Wainwright.
We're going to do men for you, because we're men up here. What do you say, guys? We're men, and we're also pirates. It's incredible. When a ship is sinking and they lower the lifeboats, and
out the life jackets. The men keep on their coats. The women and the children are the ones who must go first. And the men who try to save their skins are cowards and are cursed. Every man's a captain. Men know how to drown. Man the lifeboats if there's room, otherwise go down. And it's the same when there's a war on. It's the men who go to fight. Women and children are civilians. They're killed, it's not right. Men kill men in uniform. It's the way war goes. When they run, they're cowards. When they stay, they are heroes. Every man's a general. Men go off to war. The battlefield's a man's world. Cannon fodder's what they're for.
Get the idea there. I don't want to belabor that point, but it was fascinating to me to hear that expression of the complex relationship that men have to their own expectations of them because of their maleness. And this is the tricky territory of how do we live in the midst of our differences? How do we navigate the fact that we've inherited these just powerful, powerful structures of what it means to be a man or a woman, acknowledge that they've both harmed and helped each of us as men and women? It's really tricky territory. If you try and talk about the differences, each of us has had such an individual experience. Our sense of who a man is may be related so much to our own father, who a woman is to our own mother, that it makes it potentially really difficult to cross those barriers. Reed and I, certainly in the beginning of our marriage, made a strong and intentional effort to cross those barriers. We were going to set down the differences between men and women and live a very egalitarian marriage, which I believe we've largely done. We put it to the test early on, right in the beginning of our relationship, by taking a traditional social dancing class. Each still fierce and strong in our feminist understanding of the world, my consciousness regularly being raised by a brilliant and insightful woman. And there we were. Okay, you know. You're supposed to let me lead. No man is going to lead me, you know. And I laugh, but I got to tell you, it was very difficult, and it cast a shadow on things for a little while. It took, to some extent, a number of years to say, okay, when we're trying to do the foxtrot, and I'm oh so gently saying, would you like to spin over there? I'm not saying, and men should rule the church. And then very interestingly, years down the line, like one day I came in from having, you know, removed brush or buried a dead animal or something like that, and Rita was doing the laundry, and we gave each other a look like, what the hell happened here? You know. But part of it was beginning to grow in appreciation for the differences, for the fact that the roles, though not necessarily innate, had a place in our own psyches, and to be able to accept that. Because that's really the message here, that's our message, I think, as men as women, is that we are different, but we're equal at the same time, and living in that weird, beautiful tension and relationship is what we're up to here. And it's one of the reasons I'm so proud to be a Unitarian Universalist, is we've been among the first to ordain women, and in terms of a proportion of our leadership, We're probably the most women-run religious organization in the country. All right, there you go. Yeah, it's long overdue. I intend to call God she for about 3,000 years until the balance is redressed a little bit. What we're trying to do is celebrate our differences but affirm our equal value. And here's the thing, if women are going to go off and do a little bit of that work themselves, then the men have to do the same thing. And this is the last bit where I really need to speak to just the fellas, which is to say, if we're in charge of defining masculinity, and if the harmful images that lead to violence in the world are not what we're looking to do, then for our boys, for our future, for the children, we have to get together and we have to practice overcoming this stereotypical barrier to honest, deep communication. And one thing that I think a stumbling block is that one of the first things that men need to talk about actually is being men, what that means to be men. And men have to have that conversation with men about men. And then from there, we can begin to grow into the other deeper conversations. And that's work that straight people and gay people can do together. And I hope that you are going to heed this call. Since I've been here, various folk have stepped forward and said, there should be a men's group that's organized like the women's group, who we know are so well organized that they're off at their annual retreat today. And I noticed in the first couple of months that the main people who said that to me were women. Those men need a men's group like the women's group. Now, if these are women and men who are encountering communication difficulties in their interactions and so forth, I can understand where that urging may have come from, but it just can't work that way. And it's this work that's for ourselves, for the future of this congregation, for the future of the world. So I ask you, men out there, if you are interested in stepping forward and being the leader of a new men's group, sharing with me your visions of how men can be active and full participants of the congregation, if you want to join me in planning a retreat or even just getting the fellas together to talk, when we can really be vulnerable with each other, then there can be real breakthroughs. And I think that nothing but good will flow of that. If we don't share in that project, if we don't actively engage in the project of divining maleness and femaleness for ourselves and for the future, then we give that over to the people who think manhood equals gunning somebody down or torturing them, and I don't want that to play anymore. We will always have maybe a slight rough and tumble play about us, a stronger urge toward competition, some of these things that may be tied to our bodies, but that doesn't mean televised ultimate fighting isn't obscene, you know? And it's up to us to say that's not what manhood is anymore, and I would hope that the gals would support us in that. Okay. Cool. So talk about that and think about it, I guess, while we receive the morning offering, which is a vital part of the health and well-being of this congregation. During the time that the offering for the work of the church is received, you're welcome to come up and light candles as well, which is a way of bringing a private concern into the public worship space. Would the ushers come forward, please?